This is Dr. Batts. Welcome back to Let's Talk. We are here in the studio with Najah Wakil, who is a very interesting young lady. Welcome. Welcome to the studio, Najah.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, man. You're someone that you're intriguing, and I wanted the guests to get to know you. Intriguing, interesting, and inspiring. How's that? Three I's.
Ooh, I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah, into it. So let's just cut straight to the chase, right? Like, tell us about who is Najah?
If I had to give a description of myself looking outward, she's interesting, she's curious, and I find that curiosity, they say, kills the cat. Mm-hmm, I haven't died yet, so right. I'm still
here. You're still here. You're still standing.
And I have a lot of experience, and I think experience has cultivated my perspective on life, on not only of giving, but on how to be in my current circumstances.
Experience. Tell us a little bit. Well, let's start at the beginning, right? Like, how did you get here? You know, it was a hot summer day or a cold winter day. Like, what's the story?
Okay, so like, how did I get here? As in this studio?
Into the world. We'll start with into the world. What is your journey? What has your journey been? What is your story?
So, I was born in Philadelphia.
Shout out to Philly.
Yeah, I'm from Philadelphia. I kind of bounced around a lot. I was born on a hot summer day.
There you go.
In July.
Okay.
It was during the spiritual month of Ramadan.
That's beautiful.
Actually the holiest day of the month, they consider, like Ramadan 27th.
Wow.
And from there, my parents are reverts to Islam, so I did have an opportunity to live in some very interesting ways. My parents were a part of a community that wanted to buy their own property and be self-sustainable. So I grew up for part of my life in a commune.
Okay.
No electricity.
A Muslim commune. An
Islamic commune.
Yeah. No electricity. Go ahead.
No electricity, no running water, homeschooled. And that really gave me an interesting understanding of being. Because, you know, you're living amongst other people. There's no electricity. There's no running water. But there was always food.
And community.
There was always a community. I was raised by a lot of women. But as a kid, I didn't watch TV. I didn't listen to music. And I was always in a space to entertain myself. So, like, when we speak about village, I'm a village girl at the foundation of who
That's right.
I am.
That's
like,
right.
I just need a sunny day, some sticks and some trees, and I can be out.
Wow. Even today?
Even today, I still am pretty much, when we speak about refugees and, you know, people in the United States coming to this country, I vibe with the village ways of being. You know, the communal cooking. I know how to sew. I can cook. I can go to sleep when the lights go off.
So you talk about lost arts. You know how to sew. You know how to cook. You know how to go to sleep without the music blasting or the TV on.
Amazing. I wake up with the sunrise. I can go to sleep with the sunset. And yeah, I feel like that really gave me an appreciation for just having a nice day.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking materialism. We're just speaking about what makes a good day for me. A sunny day.
Like today.
It's beautiful. Yeah, like today, all I need, if I can get a hot drink and I can enjoy myself.
The simple things in life.
Yeah, the most beautiful things are simple.
The most beautiful things. So that was kind of like your origin story, right?
Yep.
Family, community, not a lot of noise, not too many distractions. Like that sounds beautiful. Like, so what's next? How did that manifest in the world?
So you and I were speaking before, and I was looking for the word, and I think I said typical when we were speaking about the upbringing, but it was stereotypical, or I had like a statistical, not upbringing, but, you know, my dad was arrested. He spent some time in jail.
During your youth, you're saying?
During my youth, yeah. Which, as an adult, understanding the prison system and all those things, like, really did break up the family.
That's right. So you had this really intact family. Your pops got arrested and life changed.
Life changed. And it was very interesting because my grandparents are from an upper middle class ideation of being. My grandfather was pretty successful. My grandmother was a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw that how we were living in this commune. And they took us from this communal living to like Sweet Valley High. I always say it was like I went literally not from the hood. I never lived in the hood, but I went from a commune to King of Prussia. And if you don't know King of Prussia, it is, you know, a wealthy
that's right.
Space in Pennsylvania. That's it's right. a suburbs.
That's where you get the Louis purses at.
All of this, right? So I had to learn how to acclimate to, like, these first world, in quotations,
that's right.
ways of being.
That's right.
Which I never had to worry about before. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't worry about my hair or what I wore or any of those things until I was in a school, the Upper Marion School District.
So you were homeschooled?
I was homeschooled.
And so the commune was in Philadelphia proper?
No. The commune was, so from being born, maybe we lived in Philadelphia for a few years. We moved to D.C. I don't really remember that. And then we moved to California.
Okay.
So I was in the deserts of California.
That sounds amazing.
Living in like a trailer home. I don't identify with growing up poor because that wasn't my perception until I lived in
King of Prussia.
Until I lived in King of Prussia. And I didn't have the same things that, not my white counterparts, let's put them to the side, my black counterparts.
Because in King of Prussia.
In King of Prussia, you can imagine. Like my friends had big cars and houses You know, my school had an indoor pool, outdoor pool, you know, all of these things. And even then, I was poor, but I never identified or understood the lack. I never identified with
because
not
you had
having.
Enough.
I had more than I thought I had before.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very interesting, acclimating.
So you had more than you had before, but in a sense you had less.
Exactly.
That's powerful.
And acclimating to societal standards was very new for me. Even the pronunciation of my name in Arabic is Najah. It's been Naja, Naja, Naja. So acclimating to these spaces of being was very new.
Wow.
My little sister used to say, and she has a very different upbringing. She didn't live in the commune. You know, she lived in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. She's 8 years younger than me. So like as I reached a success in my career, you know, she had Gucci purses that she was carrying her books in. She had a car.
From you.
Yeah, she had a car going to school. She has no idea, you know. Mm-hmm. She had a very structured upbringing. And, yeah, it was my first time interacting in a space of, how can I say, not just materialism, but in a space of being black.
So you got the real black experience.
Jumped right into it.
And probably weren't prepared for it.
I didn't understand it. Yeah. Like, you know, in the commune.
Because you were so protected.
Yeah, we had white Muslims. We had some Asian Muslims, black Muslims. It was like.
You were Muslim and you were family.
Muslim family. And if you weren't Muslim, it was like, okay, they're not Muslim. My family wasn't. My parents were Muslim, but my grandparents, my cousins and things weren't Muslim. So it was a very interesting interaction with the world. You know, from the hair to the clothes, like my mom was not buying us Jordans. My first pair of Jordans I bought myself at 14 because I had a job. And in King of Prussia, I also always had a job, you know, like I was the kids in the suburbs shovel snow in the wintertime. White kids, black kids, we shoveled snow. We cleaned
for
lawns.
For money or?
Yeah, for money. $10 a driveway.
Okay.
You know.
We when we were younger, we did that in Brooklyn too.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. How did your dreams change going from the commune, this communal living, to the suburbia? How did your dreams change? How did your identity change? I mean, you talked about the hair, but the ways in which you defined yourself, not how the world defined you.
I think I'm still in the process of defining myself, if I'm honest.
That's fair.
It's a everlasting evolution of being.
Yeah.
In the commune, I was going to be a mom with six kids, and I was going to homeschool my kids and all of these things, you know, as a very little girl. But I always dreamt of traveling the world. And
was that through books? Because you didn't watch television. So.
No. Definitely books. Like, going to the library is what we did.
Okay. So you saw the world through literature.
I saw the world through literature. My mom would take us to the library. It's where we would rent movies. We also played some games where we would have the newspaper and we would read and newscast your voices. People ask me, how do I speak this way? And it's like, speak which way? I remember my dad saying like, yeah, she has to go to North Philly. And I spent some summers in North Philly because my dad was very concerned that I was trying to be white or identified with this idea of what whiteness was. And it's like, no, while you were gone, we were reading the newspaper. First person to mess up was out of the game. You know what I mean? So, but going back to understanding who I was or what I wanted to be, I remember telling my 10th grade teacher, because somewhere in there we moved to further out to Phoenixville. I don't know if you know
I'm
where that is.
Phoenixville.
Yeah, and I remember telling my 10th grade teacher, and I was always getting in trouble in school. I had a mouth. I was always in school suspension and all of these things. And one of the in-school suspension teacher, his name was Coach Rocco. And Coach Rocco would tell me, like, why are you here? Like, what are you doing here? Because I was an athlete. And I told him, I'm going to be a teacher because of you. Because he really made me understand the difference between applying myself and not applying myself. Mm-hmm. My grades sucked because I wasn't doing the work.
That's right.
This time, I was probably in ninth grade.
Okay. But Coach Rocco took attention and had expectations of you.
In ninth grade, yeah. I was an athlete in junior high. You know, the high school coach would come and watch me run track. He'd always tell me, you're going to run for me. And so I had a lot of attention on it being an athlete. Like, I was first place in all of the races and all of these things. And Coach Rocco, he had me taking school.
Shout out to Coach Rocco.
I think he passed away, but yeah, shout out to Coach Rocco.
Well, I mean, to all the Coach Roccos in the world, right? That take a moment to love on people and to help them see themselves.
Exactly. And he kind of, you know, he thought he was keeping me out of trouble. Like, he had me, I think he was the baseball coach and the basketball coach, but somehow in eighth grade, I was taking score for the boys' basketball team. So I'd go to all of the home and away games, and I would take
score. He kept you focused, huh?
Yeah, and with track, it was like, hey, you're not going to be eligible for track, whatever. My coach, Jay Carlin, still contacts me from this day. He's like, you could have been this and that. And it's like, I was an athlete because I was good. But it wasn't something I was interested in applying myself to be the best.
Wow. No passion to it, really.
No, I liked winning. And I played individual sports because I enjoyed winning. And I didn't want to depend on other people to win. I was so annoyed when my 4x1 team would get second place. It's like, what are you guys doing?
So although you had this communal upbringing, you still had this idea of winning as an individual.
Exactly. Because I'm the oldest of four.
Oh, so you had to carry the squad.
I was the oldest of four. If I wasn't doing it, it wasn't getting done. And yeah. I was very confident that I could do it.
So inevitably, when I bring people up here, this conversation goes towards systems. You talked about the criminal justice system. You talked about the education system. Everyone seems to go there. What is the role that these systems play in our lives?
I think, like, if you're aware, a lot of people don't even know aware that they're actively participating in a system.
Mm-hmm.
Once you understand that there are various systems, you kind of feel a little cheated. Because if you had known about the system very young, maybe you would have acted or not acted in the system. Yeah, so when I speak about them, it's just that I understand that I wasn't so well informed about the system that
That's
we
right.
participate in, and it's sometimes a little hurtful.
So what advice do you have for parents, mentors, grandparents, Coach Roccos, to help prepare our youth to navigate these systems in a way that they win?
I think the most intellectual advice that I could give those people would be to instill confidence in your person that you're upbringing or you're mentoring mm-hmm. or you're encouraging. Give them the confidence and the tools that they need to create their own systems within the system.
You're listening to Let's Talk. This is Dr. Batts in the studio with Najah. Amazing conversation. We'll be right back. Peace.
Weekend Edition Saturday is a well-rounded news talk program about the economy, music, literature, and more. Join host Scott Simon and company as they discuss the latest events happening around the world. Start your weekend off with great programming beginning with Weekend Edition Saturday at 8 a.m., followed by NPR's Fresh Air Weekend at 10 a.m., and great folk, blues, and Americana on All Reed Street at 11 a.m., all here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Let's Talk in the studio with Dr. Batts and Najah Wakil, man. You are, so I started off by saying you are inspiring, you are interesting, and you're intriguing. And I'm also hearing something like invincible. I'm also hearing something like incredible. Like, you just have this energy that says, and you said earlier, right? Like, you love to win. You love to win. So let's talk about what that has looked like in your life. You talked about career success. You talked about sports. What does winning feel like? What does it look like? Give us some particulars. We left off at ninth grade in sports. Where'd the journey go from there?
I think when we speak about winning, I'd like to say, like, I win if we win.
That's right.
So, like, my biggest contribution to winning is being of service. Like, I generally enjoy being of service. I like to serve. I also like to be served. So, picking up where we left off, the 9th grade, 10th grade, my dad's coming out of prison. He got arrested in California, so now we have to move back to California. In this space, we find out that my brother has muscular dystrophy, so I then go back to being homeschooled. And with less structure, but a full family that kind of needed me to protect and provide. You know, my 2 younger siblings, I have a brother that's right under me, but primarily protecting and providing a structure for my siblings. So I moved to California, back to this desert area.
To serve.
To serve my family. I was, you know, the one to put them on the bus, get them off the bus. My parents were working. They worked long hours. I was the point of contact. Mm. My brother was disabled, so I'm carrying him upstairs, washing him, feeding him with pleasure, with pleasure. That's right. That's cool. He is a part of the reason that I am so welcoming and inviting to the world, because there was a lot of things that he didn't get the opportunity to do. But despite his circumstances, he was very empowering. Like, he would tell me, like, he asked me, like, is this weird, you know, helping him go to the bathroom? I'm like, no, is this weird for you? Like, as he got older. And he was like, no, it's not weird for me. And I was like, it's not weird for me. I've been changing your diaper since you've existed. Like, right. You know.
That was your brother.
With pleasure. And he would always thank me for being a good big sister. And you're going to be an amazing mom. And, yeah, he really gave perspective to being grateful and appreciative for what you have and the ability to expand on that. And winning really is being of service. Like, we don't win unless we're all winning. Like, what's the point of being the only person at the top of a mountain?
That's the scary part that people don't understand. Who wants to be the only one with money or the only one on top looking down at the people they care about?
You really can't do it. I mean, you can do it, but then when you're up there, you don't have anybody else up there with you. And, you know, a lot of people.
It's a lonely place.
It's a lonely place. That's why people drag people with them and they pay them to be, you know, standing shoulder to shoulder with them.
Mm. So community is clearly important to you. Family is clearly important to you. What are some other things that we haven't touched on that are important to you? Like, what are your big whys?
My why is, it's such an interesting thing to ask the why, because it's because. Like, my why is because I'm here. Like, I'm still here. I'm not going to be here forever.
So you have work to do.
I have work to do, and I'm doing it. You see that I bought someone from the studio. I don't even know her that well, but I've been working with her since being back in the country for a few months, and she's gravitated to me. And if I can inspire her or help her get a clear view or understanding of who she is, then I've done my job. Like, I like being a mirror for people. I like for people to see me, and they have an idea that, oh, I can be her. And I don't mean be her aesthetically, but be this person that is willing to give.
That's right.
And I think the biggest thing that I give is my time and my appreciation and my attention. It's the only thing I can give that is infinite and it's free.
I think Muhammad Ali said something about services are rent that we pay for being in the world or something like that.
Did I butcher
it?
Something like that. I'm not so sure. I don't really know it.
something along those lines is what you make me think of, though. So we understand a little bit about your why. We understand a little bit about your being. What keeps you up at night when you look at the world, when you look at your world? What keeps you up?
The lack of protection for our children.
Say a little more about that.
We're not taking care of our babies. Like, even the people that think they're taking care of their babies, they're not taking care of their babies because they haven't had the opportunity to know themselves. I also don't stay up at night worrying about the things that I can't change. I'm only one person. There's 8 billion or 8 billion plus people in this world. I think that if I can inspire one person and if I can plant the seed and nurture that seed and they grow fruit, then somebody's going to come and pick that fruit and it'll keep going.
That's right. So what advice do you have for our listeners? And this is not specific individuals that you know, but just for someone that might come across this podcast?
My advice would be to keep being innovative and start with yourself. Keep trying things and start with yourself. Don't be so afraid of what the outcome can be. if you try something new, you're going to be new. It's impossible not to try something new and not to add the failure or the success to who you are as a person. I don't like to give advice without understanding.
You need context.
I always need context. And yeah. I've had a lot of experiences going back into like the career thing. I was a successful model for a very long time in my adult career. Mm-hmm. And I had to continuously be comfortable with being in the system of materialism. I had to,
coming from a system of community.
It was very awkward. Yeah. And yeah. You know, aesthetic. Aesthetic was not something that I was so conscious of until I had to be conscious of and of it, until it was how I paid my bills, until mm-hmm. it was how, God forbid anything happened to my mom, how was I going to take care of this disabled brother of mine if mm-hmm. I didn't have the funds to do it? Mm-hmm. So another piece of advice would be not to worry about the fiscals of how you're going to do it. You did it yesterday, you can do it today. Mm. And keep innovating daily how you're going to do it, because eventually you get there and that it changes all the time.
That's right. So you can continue to recreate yourself and provide.
All the time. I'm not the same person I was 5-10 years ago. Not even in the thought process, not even in the ways of being. I'm not the same.
Yeah. So what's next?
Next, I hope to keep growing and nurturing projects for people around me and help people get mm-hmm. to levels of success, not only materialistically or financially, but with themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a consultancy called Point Nexus, and my goal with that is to help people's ideas come to life. Whether they fail or succeed, they'll have another way of existing.
That's after right. It prepared you for the next one.
Yeah.
And it seems like that is your theme. It's like you said, to serve, we win together, but also to help people develop and to draw what's great in them.
I love it. I've seen it and I love it. I've gotten, you know, friends are like, hey, thank you so much. Random strangers. I've had conversations with women on the streets that are like, you changed my perspective of who I thought I was or how I thought I was going to do this. And that's exciting. It's a high. It doesn't last long enough, but it's definitely a high. And then you see them use the information. You know, the ego sometimes gets in the way when they use the information and don't give you credit, but it doesn't matter because you know that you helped inspire that. You know it.
That's
and
right.
No one can ever take that away from you.
Is that one of your gifts?
It is the gift.
That is your gift.
That is my gift. I have the ability to see, to nurture, to give perspective, and to mirror back your greatness.
Mm. Every time you say that or you talk about your work, and I've said this to you before, I think about you as a doula.
Yeah.
You know, you're helping us to birth our ideas.
And I love it.
Yeah. That's beautiful. So when we think about the children, back to you talked about we're not caring for our children, and this idea of a doula takes me there. Where do we begin? Like, how do we start?
We first start at identifying and having them identify not who they are in the system, but who they are as beings. Like, I had the opportunity to cook and in a playful way. I thought I was playing around, but I was cooking for other kids, baking, sewing, building mud castles. I had the opportunity to actually just be in
space. So you didn't play PlayStation and Nintendo?
I don't even... Handling a remote control gives me an anxiety. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm very bad
at it. If I give you some soil,
I would love it. I would know what to do. If you gave me some soil, some fabric, I'd be wrapping stuff up. You'd be like, what? You made a whole outfit?
Wow. That's another, right? Those are those lost arts. So allow our children to be, to use their hands, to use their minds. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yes. And maybe it doesn't even start with them. Maybe it starts from the top up. Maybe it starts with you taking your hat off and your hair off and just sitting in your mess and really realizing who you are. Maybe it doesn't start with the children. Maybe it starts from the top up, because how can I say these things and not be them?
That's right.
How can I say, oh, put our children wherever and we, you know, we take them to the forest and all those things and I'm back home doing whatever. Maybe it's adults. Maybe it's taking us to the villages.
Black men frolicking.
Exactly. Because I was frolicking. Me and my homegirl were frolicking, and it felt fantastic.
Yeah, it's good for your soul.
Yep. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's not starting from the bottom up. Maybe it's starting from the
Because we have to model these things, right? Because in our work around violence prevention and our work around youth development, we say you can't teach respect. You can't teach compassion. You can't teach success. You have to model it. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're saying. You're saying even the caring and self-love and patience and meditation, you can't teach those. You have to model them.
You have to model them to even understand them.
To even understand. You can't teach something you don't understand.
How? And that's the problem with all these systems. Lots of people get involved in systems that they have been, and please excuse me, and no offense, they have gone through the systems of education, and now they think that because they got the piece of paper that they're in the position to model what they learned. And
That's right.
Just read a book and regurgitated
it. That's right. And you can't learn through that. I mean, we oftentimes think about this. I've had lots of mentors and have sat in apprenticeship because I was taught that that's where mastery happens. But we're taught in the system that is through these formal educational practices. But the masters say you can't learn from a book. They have to sit and walk with people and be in relationship.
And you have to fail. How do you learn without failing?
Yeah. And in our community, we're oftentimes not allowed to fail, you know?
I mean,
failing is a privilege.
Exactly, because failing could equate life or death.
That's it.
It could equate to starvation.
That's right. To prison. Yeah.
But in our community, we also don't have a space to just be. And that's the epidemic of being Black in America. We don't have the space to just be.
Yeah.
You see somebody.
And just breathe.
You can see somebody sitting in front of a building and they just needed a minute. And now here comes security telling him to scurry along. It's somebody of color usually that's told to scurry along.
You can't sit down and just have a cup of coffee. You talked about just a hot drink. You can't just be still and have a hot drink.
No, I couldn't go down there, sit my legs crossed in front of a tree and a patch of grass, if it was inappropriately placed, and just be. I would be asked, what was I doing there?
Now you're getting into this conversation around green space and environmental justice and things like that.
I mean, we can go on. I have a lot of
things. That's a whole other conversation. In closing, what do you want to leave us with?
I want to leave you with the idea that you yourself can be an inspiration for someone. We're all looking and watching. Before you worry about what we're seeing, remember that you also have to look and watch at yourself. And from there, the greatness is within you. And I know it's so hippy-dippy, these ideas of being, but it really does start with you, putting a mirror in front of yourself, being real about your BS before you go and tell somebody else their real BS.
Self-reflection, self-reflective practices.
It's the best.
It's what we need. Najat, it's a pleasure to meet you. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
An inspiration.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, I look forward to having these conversations further.
Thank you. This is Dr. Batts. You are listening to Let's Talk. We're here with Najat Wakil. Thank you for listening. Please remember that you are an inspiration. Look within and go forth and serve.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to wdiy.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.